Okay, so we're learning Chavitz Halvavos, Shar HaBechina, and we're going through the human body, which the Chavitz Halvavos says, out of everything in the universe that there is to marvel at and to see Hashem's existence and wisdom and complexity and design and purpose and form and, you know, out of everything, the human body is the easiest. He says it's the easiest because it's the one we just have to look and think a little. Like, how does that work? How does that work? And of course, we're 1,000 years later, and we know so much more than the Bible tells us. And it just proves everything he says, like, amazing, you know, more amazing than ever. So he's talking about the head, the brain, and he said that, so last week we learned about the brain being the seat of emotion, of creativity, of feelings, emotional feelings. Spiritual, what did he call it? He called it kochos haruchniyim, your spiritual faculties, where you, if you decide to transcend the physical world and not be so involved in gashmius, so that's all, those decisions, life decisions, consciousness, existential questions, they're all decided by the brain. Besides, okay, then there's the scientific knowledge of the brain, which he doesn't even talk about. First he says, he'll get to it. But the first thing is, it's the seat of kochos haruchniyim. It's the source of your of our ruchniyistika kochos, as I just explained. And then, physically, it's mabua hahergesh, it's the source of all sensation, the shoresh ha'atzabin, and the source of our sensations, and the source of the nerve system, of the nervous system. It's in the brain. In other words, as I said, we said, when you feel something with your fingers, that something's cold, that feeling is happening in the brain. When you feel something sharp, it's happening in the brain. The sensation is an electrical signal carried by the nerves to the brain. And everything, hearing is in the brain, seeing is in the brain, everything that's the source of all sensation, as he says, is the brain. Now he talks about shoresh ha'atzabin, which means the source of the nervous system. And I'll be talking about that a little as well. The nervous system is a network of nerves, which are wires made up of special cells that are interconnected throughout the body. The nerves use electrical impulses to gather information about what is happening in every part of the body. It's analyzed with the brain and the spinal cord. They analyze it, and the brain communicates with the rest of the body through the nerves, giving instructions to all parts of the body about what to do and when to do it. The internal organs of the body, the heart, the stomach, the intestines, are regulated by a part of the nervous system called the autonomic nervous system. We're unaware of the workings of this system because it functions in an involuntary manner. The brain controls it and it's automatic. We don't notice when our blood vessels change size, when our heart beats faster. It's not something we control. This is an automatic thing that the brain just does. The brain is what decides when we're in danger and when we can relax, and adjusts regulatory nerves in the spinal cord that adjust bodily functions accordingly. If we're in danger, the heart beats faster, blood pressure increases, digestion slows down, blood vessels feeding the digestive organs become constricted to slow down the flow of blood to those organs, and the blood vessels feeding the muscles of the limbs, because you want to run, and the lungs are dilated so that the person has more energy to run away from danger or to defend himself. When a person's brain decides that he or she should urinate, the sphincter muscle relaxes, releasing the flow of urine from the bladder, and at the same time the muscle walls of the bladder tighten, squeezing the bladder to eject the urine. And these are all, most of it's we don't control this urine, the bodily, this is the chesed Hashem, that the bodily wastes we can control. Like, out of everything, we can control that, or else it would be pretty embarrassing to walk around. You could have to urinate at any time, or solid waste at any time. And it's a chesed Hashem, and Hashem not covered up brios, and that, out of like all the things going on in the body, that's one of the few things that we can control. The functions of the body are under control of the brain. If the person had to control all the involuntary functions of the body consciously, he would not have time to think. It's a chesed Hashem that he designed our nervous system so that our conscious mind is freed from the mundane chores of keeping the body running as it should, even though it's like, again, millions of things going on, but they're functioning, you know, basically automatically. Any small impairment to the brain changes a normal person, Rachmana Litzlan, into a cripple. Without proper functioning of the brain, a person might not be able to move his arms, to eat, to walk, or to think, or to talk. The impairment is not in the aver, it's not in the leg or in the tongue, it's in the brain. I looked up in these other books a little more. Let's see, 167. It's very cute the way this author writes. He said, if you would say, oh, someone invented the mechanical cash register in 1876. The guy invented the mechanical cash register. And that's like, wow, that's great. But people that didn't take to these new inventions, so they're standing there with a pencil behind the ear and a brown paper bag. I still remember that. When I was a child going shopping on the Lower East Side, they had the paper, the brown paper bag, and the pencil behind the ear, and he had a long list of figures. And so you say, like, what's more amazing? So you say, well, a mechanical adding machine. That's what a invention. But the brain that the fellow's using is really so. Which do you think is more efficient? Be prepared for some surprises. For in between your ears is assembled a piece of equipment whose complexity is barely understood and which almost defies description. In looks, it is humble. It resembles a grey custard and weighs as much as a large grapefruit. But compared to the brain, other wonders of the universe pale into insignificance. Your brain is responsible for your intelligence, creativity, memories, perceptions, reactions, emotions. Some of its processes you're aware of, such as thought and memory. But your brain does much more without you realizing it. It controls your bodily functions, such as the heartbeat, breathing, and digestion. It monitors the concentration of substances, glucose and carbon dioxide in the blood, adjusts water and nutrient levels, brings on feelings of hunger and thirst when supplies run low. Your brain also screens the gigantic amounts of information that are gathered continuously by your senses. Why aren't we overwhelmed by all the information? The brain selects what's important and ignores the rest. If you're reading and in the background you hear someone call you, the brain is capable of tuning one out and picking the other. The brain is capable of shifting gears instantly. If you slip on ice, your brain immediately directs you to regain your balance, signals your arm to break the fall. If you hit the ground, your brain informs you of the pain. And the event is stored in your memory to warn you to walk carefully on ice in the future. Enter a huge library and gaze at the rows of shelves containing thousands of volumes reaching to the ceiling. Your little brain contains all that information and much, much more. Not only that, but every piece of information can be instantly recalled. And he gives a few examples. If someone says, did you ever hear of this and this place? You'll instantly say yes or no. Our brain is so chemically active that although it weighs only 1/50th of the weight of the body, it uses up to 1/5th of the body's energy supply. The brain demands a steady supply of nourishment, and in situations of starvation, it receives the first call of any available supply. If you knew the entire Shas and someone said you can learn a Mishnah, the compliment would ring hollow. Similarly, some people wishing to praise the design of the brain compare it to a computer. What an insult! No computer exists that can duplicate all of the brain's myriad functions. Just take the component parts. Under your size 7 hat, you have some 30 billion nerve cells called neurons. It would be relatively easy to comprehend if the neurons were connected to the brain like the spokes of a wheel, but they're not. Most of these neurons are connected to other neurons. Each neuron is cross-connected between 10,000 and 100,000 others. This means a total of 10 trillion connections. A complete wiring diagram of this network would stagger the imagination. All of the telephone cables of the world would comprise no more than a small fraction of it all. And this, every person has this. A neuron looks something like a spider attachment attached to a filament. The spider is the cell body, the filament is the nerve wire, and the legs are the dendrites of the cell. The legs pick up a signal from adjacent neurons, pass it to the body. The signal is in turn passed along by the filaments at speeds up to 225 miles per hour. After each signal passes, it takes the filament about 1/2,000th of a second to chemically recharge itself. At no point do any of these neurons touch each other. Signals are passed like sparks over a gap. At each firing, one nerve chemically communicates with another. That means that each signal that travels to or from the brain is in fact a series of millions of separate chemical reactions whizzing along at 330 feet per second. And you want to compare the brain to a computer? Don't insult the brain. If you want to know the speed that your brain reacts to external stimuli, think of the following. If a top-ranked tennis player hits a serve, the ball travels at more than 100 miles an hour. The opponent has less than a third of a second to note the speed and direction of the ball, move into position, watch for the bounce and spin, and swing the racket for the return shot. What about motor racing? At 200 miles an hour, a racing car travels almost 330 feet per second. The driver's safety depends on reactions measured in hundredths of a second. Everybody admits to the fantastic design of the racing car that achieves such superlative performances, and everyone praises the racing driver for his lightning reflexes. Will everyone please praise the creator of the brain that was able to design a racing car, together with the creator of the brain that can perform with such speed and dexterity? No one carries eggs home in their pockets, specially designed containers, perform their protective job well. Similarly, the brain resides in a well-protected fortress. The skull is 1/4 inch thick at the top and even thicker at the base. It is bathed in a watery fluid that cushions it from shock. An effective barrier made from blood acts as a gatekeeper. It welcomes the vital glucose fuel, but blocks out bacteria and toxic substances. Okay, that's... just bear with me a little more. What? These are the three books I told you by the fellow in England. Our Wondrous World, Our Amazing World, and Designer World. He talks about building the English Channel Tunnel. And it says, like, unbelievable how they met. It was such a big tunnel. And would you like to hear something even more amazing? I'll skip the description of the tunnel. Take a look at the human brain. The average brain has about 30 billion nerve cells. Each nerve cell sprouts between 10,000 to 100,000 fibers in order to contact other nerve cells in the brain. Taken together, the number of these connections is approximately 10 trillion. Numbers of this magnitude are difficult to imagine, but there they are. Despite all these connections, this forest of fibers is not a chaotic random tangle, but a highly organized network where most fibers have specific communication functions and follow regular pathways through the brain. It has been calculated that if only 1/100th of one person's brain connections were specifically routed, that would still add up to more connections than in the Earth's entire communications network. He says, okay, let's go right to now. So you have to thank Hashem for our brain, right? That's it's controlling all of this. Okay, we're going to continue now. Baharechem lekayem hazera. Those are the next words in the Chayvus Halbavos that we're learning. The womb that creates a child. I mean, that's the incubator for a child. He doesn't, that's all, he just says these three words. We talked a lot about it already, how the child grows in the womb. It's mamish, a miracle. It starts off with nothing, with nothing, and it grows into a person. With everything that we're learning about, like built into the uterus is a baby incubator, so we'll just touch upon it. Expands to accommodate the baby, works with the placenta to supply the baby with nutrients. When it's time for the baby to be born, the uterus contracts to expel the baby and the placenta, then it shrinks back down and gets ready to start the whole cycle again. The uterus is the place that the fetus develops. The uterus is where the egg grows and develops. Developing babies get oxygen and nutrition through the uterus. Uterus allows the excretion of carbon dioxide and waste from the baby, and it supplies antibodies to protect the fetus from infectious diseases. During pregnancy, uterus produces progesterone, a hormone for the maintenance of pregnancy. The job of the uterus is to break down the baby's food and to hold the baby in place. There is as yet no artificial womb, although if we could invent one, it would be tremendously useful. Babies do not use their lungs to breathe or their mouths to eat. So how do they get the necessary nutrition and oxygen to grow and thrive? A womb has a complex support system sustaining the fetus with the necessary nutrients and oxygen that are critical to baby development while inside the uterus. And, you know, meanwhile, it's like, it's nothing. Well, what does it start with? It starts with nothing. The umbilical cord is the baby's lifeline. It is the superhighway that connects the placenta to the baby. It's made up of three blood vessels, two arteries, and one vein. That's three. The two arteries carry blood away from the fetus to the placenta, where it dumps the waste products from the infant into the maternal bloodstream to be filtered out by the kidneys. The vein carries oxygen and nutrient-rich blood from the mother's bloodstream to the infant. All this happens without the two blood supplies ever mixing. Then you have the amniotic sac, which protects it from the outside world. As the baby develops, it will start to inhale and exhale the amniotic fluid. This is sometimes called practice breathing. It develops the lungs. It has nothing to do really with breathing oxygen. Okay, let's go weiter. So, Barechem Lekayim Hazera. This is why there's a simon, you know, there's a perek kuflamet tes in Tehillim that talks about pregnancy and the neflaos habore in making the development of all the things that a person needs, like down to the DNA and everything. It's amazing, it's nice. There's no other way to describe it. Let's continue in the Chayvus Halavos. V'chein she'or evorei haguf. And now he says, all the limbs of the body, he really didn't, it's like, people are bored already with what we're doing, but he didn't scratch the surface. He didn't talk about all the evorim of the body. And that's his statement. We know that he didn't talk about so much more, because this, it's so, everything is so involved, and you know. And it's, like I said, it's 1,000 years later. We know so much more. And he says, "V'chein sharei borei haguf, the other limbs of the body, v'ashayei olei mimenu, we don't even know mitoalo sehem, their benefits, yosem imashenir alanu. We know, we only know what is obvious to us, but there's for sure so much more that we don't know. Anything we learn is really a small part of the knowledge that exists about the complexities of the human body. And the more you learn, the more you see that you don't know. And you see that there's more and more, and it gets deeper and deeper and more complex. Okay. Now, he now moves into functions of the body. Okay. Till now, even though we mixed the two a lot, but till now he talked about body parts and their and how they function, just what they are and what they're supposed to do, and the amazing complexity and design in things working in this piece of machinery called the human body. And now he's going to go on to the pu'ulos that the body does, and like working like a factory and how that works. So before we continue, I want to read some more about the body. Let's add in some books. Page 184. You'll have to send me a message if it's boring. Okay, he writes very cute, this person, because he always gives mashalim from a city, and he says, like things that amaze us, like, you know, if a person would come here and go to a town and it would be clean, and a house, each house has its own garbage can, and like just the things that we take for granted, we would be amazed. And then you realize, like, if someone from the 1500s would come, that's how he writes it, if someone from the 1500s would come to a city nowadays, he would see so much planning and design and the garbage trucks and the, you know, and the water system, it would like, and they didn't have any of that in the 1500s, a few hundred years ago. And if it was like, you know, if you would go back in time and describe it to people who lived then, they wouldn't believe it. They wouldn't believe that all this whole city produces, and this factories and chemical factories, and there's so much going on in this city. He says, but the people of the big city, right, they're not amazed at it because they're accustomed to it and take it all for granted. The city's organized, it has roads, houses, factory sites, open spaces. Think of a giant chemical factory, acres of pipes, steams, and storage tanks. The chemical factory takes substances, breaks them down, and builds them up in highly complex reactions, just like a tiny, tiny, tiny cell in your body. It staggers the imagination to perceive that in such a tiny entity there is so much activity, so much planning and purpose. Hundreds of chemical changes and reactions occur every second in each living cell. These changes can take place only if the chemical substances are in the form of a watery solution, and that's why water is vital for life of any kind. Well, here comes another amazing fact. Although water can pass in and out of the cell in an uncontrolled way, because individual water molecules are small enough to pass through the outer cover of the cell, called the membrane, nutrients, minerals, and other essential items cannot, because their molecules are too large to pass through the membrane. Incredibly, each cell membrane can regulate the passage of larger molecules, such as proteins, by allowing them entry only at certain sites, which are like entrance and exit doors. By opening and closing these doors, the cell regulates its contents and keeps a healthy balance of body substances. Do you know of any city which is surrounded by a wall with an efficient security system at each gate that developed to its present standard by accident? Is the entry procedure at Ben-Gurion Airport, with its computerized list of undesirable applicants, a haphazard arrangement? The city's organized, it has houses, it has office buildings, walls, floors, doors, elevator shafts, windows, stairways. A cell's interior is highly structured also. Membranes are found not only surrounding the cell as a barrier, but also inside the cell. These membranes curve, bend, and fold back on themselves to create tubes, channels, compartments, other structures in which chemicals are organized. In exactly the same way that the whole body has a framework of bones to give it shape and strength, every tiny cell has a framework. This is made of scaffolding like microtubules of protein. How have a look at the area within the cell where energy from nutrients is released by complicated chemical reactions to provide the fuel for the body's life processes. Visit the ribosomes where proteins are assembled from amino acids. Did you say that every city has a bus station? Then come to the endoplasmic reticulum, the area within the cell where the cell products are assembled and transported. We're talking about, remember, an area many times less than a hundredth the size of the period that you see at the end of this sentence. And there's no doubt that the building which occupies the place of pride in every city is the civic center or the city hall, right? May we show you the tiny cell civic center? It is to be found in the center of the cell and is called the nucleus. The nucleus is the cell's control center, and it contains all the genetic information that will ensure that an intestinal cell will behave like an intestinal cell, not like a brain cell. Genetic information are units of inheritance passed from the parents to their offspring. Genes are the plans for each feature of the body, such as bone shape, intestinal structure, skin color. Genes are sections of the chemical DNA, which is a story in itself, packaged into structures called chromosomes and arranged in pairs inside the nucleus of the cell. Vast quantities of information are stored within the nucleus. In fact, the capacity of the DNA to store information vastly exceeds that of any known system, any library. Okay. Talks about building a house and making sure, like, it should be like structured. He has these fancy mishalim always at first. It doesn't get to the point till later. The human body, like he talks about a building and how like it has to be structured and how everything fits and the windows and the doors and the runners and like every little thing is complicated and every little thing has to make sure it fits with everything else. And then he says the human body is an incredible masterpiece of bioengineering. Under its skin lie hundreds of muscles, bones, blood vessels, glands, and other parts. These work day and night. As blood pulses through the arteries and veins, food passes through the intestines, and electrical signals flash along the nerves. It is impossible not to be impressed with the human body. To the biologist, the body is built up from millions and millions of cells that help the body to grow and to maintain itself. To the chemist, the body is an amazingly complicated combination of atoms and molecules undergoing millions of chemical reactions every second. To the dietary expert, the body is a collection of substances, proteins, minerals, carbohydrates, needing to take in correctly balanced types of food to keep itself in order. And to a mechanical engineer, the body is an incredibly sophisticated, self-controlling, self-repairing machine. Many science fiction stories feature robots and other human-like creatures. It is highly doubtful that the technology needed to build such a sophisticated machine will ever exist. Robots have never successfully copied the body's ability to walk in a well-balanced way on two legs, let alone the huge variety of fast action, precise movements, the range of sight, hearing, touch, other senses. And every single aspect of the whole structure of the human body declares planning and foresight of the most detailed kind. Take a few simple examples. Everyone's nose is directly above their mouth. The nose has three main functions. One is to inhale air, moisten and warm it, and send it down to the lungs. The fact that the body is equipped with two independent methods of inhaling life-giving air, one through the mouth and one through the nose, thus allowing an emergency route should one or the other become blocked. The second is to detect aromas by means of the organ housed in the upper section of the nose. Third is to support the eyeglasses that permit millions of humans to see and focus. If you were planning the human body, you would suggest that it is important to be able to see the food as it approaches your mouth. Similarly, the aroma of the food greatly enhances the enjoyment of the eating process. Smelling the food requires the person to inhale, capturing flying molecules and delivering them safely to the olfactory organs. Seeing and focus with the help of eyeglasses, smelling and breathing are thus all integrated functions, requiring them to be in close proximity. Not surprisingly, they are. They're all together on the face. The ideal way to breathe is through the nose. He talks about that. Okay. Okay, just one more before we go further. The pituitary gland, because he's not talking about individual avarim anymore. And I don't think he talked about the pituitary gland. Says if everybody has kids that are fussy eaters, and they don't like this, and they don't like that, and they're allergic to this, and allergic to that. Well, let's say you're cooking for an institution of several hundred hungry individuals, each of whom is fussy, beyond description. Too much salt, not enough paprika, don't put mustard, chowns too watery, potatoes in the chown. There's no end. Imagine now that you are the cook of an institution that has not only several hundred members, but several thousand. Not even several thousand, but a number so great that the only way you can comprehend it is to say that for each person living in the world, there are 17,000. That means we're talking about 60 trillion members in the institution. The answer is your very own body. But that is the number of individual cells that you possess, give or take a few million. Every single cell requires nourishment to allow it to function, but the shopping list of individual tissue and organ cells are by no means identical. Some require protein, others fats, nerve cells need potassium, bone cells require calcium and fluorine, oxygen-carrying cells need iron, copper, and manganese, whereas thyroid cells need iodine. Some cells are looking for vitamins, others for hormones. Others still are desperate for enzymes. One cell will want a microscopic trace of cobalt. Others will call for glucose, amino acids, or a simple drink of water. Every cell needs something, and that something is as varied as chalk is from cheese. When you exercise, tissue requirements for just about everything increase enormously. How is this vast distribution system organized? Where are the millions and millions of meals prepared? Who delivers them to their correct destination? And how does each cell know what belongs specifically to it and no other? When you think of the transport system in the body, you have to think big. It is well known that within every human there is a transport system with more than 60,000 miles of route, more than a global airline. An intricate arrangement of pumping from the heart via the arteries, and muscular activity squeezing the veins and pushing the blood upwards, complete with regularly spaced valves, guarantee a steady stream of life-giving blood that extends to the very extremities of the network. Volume and pressure are kept at the same level. Fresh supplies of oxygen and food are brought in as fast as they are consumed, and poisonous end products are never allowed to accumulate. The intricate pipeline system is so efficient that on average a red cell will complete the circuit of the body in 45 seconds. Just think of it. In slightly over a minute, the complete contents of the 60,000 mile network, which reaches every cell in the body from an earlobe to little toe, will have circulated not once, but twice.
How often?
What?
And how often did they circulate?
45 seconds.
Wow.
No journey could be as eventful as that experienced by a blood cell during its momentous odyssey. Take a tiny red blood cell. A single drop of blood contains millions of them. It has been charged with the task of carrying oxygen from the lungs to the tissue, and on the return journey to carry carbon dioxide from the tissues to the lungs. This little cell has a very distinctive shape, looking like a disc, which has been pressed on either side like the wheels of a car. This interesting shape has been specifically designed to give it a large surface area so it can absorb more oxygen. It has no nucleus. Instead, the inside is filled with a red pigment called hemoglobin, and it is this that gives blood a familiar red color. Hemoglobin is a remarkable substance and is responsible for carrying the oxygen. When red blood cells pass through the lungs, the hemoglobin readily forms with the oxygen, forming a complex compound. In this form, the red blood cells rushes to the tissues, where another complicated chemical reaction occurs, allowing it to release its oxygen while at the same time collecting the waste carbon dioxide. One of the vital ingredients of hemoglobin is iron, the reason why iron is so important in our diet. Okay. And they say like each part of the body, each cell gets delivered to it exactly what it needs. And no one's getting into accidents and no one's bumping into each other. Yeah. It's amazing. It's Shar HaBechina. The Chavis Lovis wants us to study this and realize how amazing it is. And just be full of gratitude to Hashem, whatever else is going on in our lives or in our bodies, just if we can digest food, that like would take up our whole lives. Thanking Hashem for the ability to digest. Okay, we'll stop here.